The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Can you hear me okay?
Great.
Hello, good evening. Welcome. So, show of hands of who is here tonight for the first time. Keep your hands up for a moment, please. Great. Okay, so look around and see who the new people are, because in a moment we're going to just say hello to each other and especially welcome the new people. This is a community, it's an IMC community, so let's just take a couple of minutes to introduce yourself, please, to 2 or 3 people around you. Say your name, say where you're coming from. Go. Hello. Yes, on. Yes, great. It was lovely to hear the energy in the room and everyone talking. It took you a moment to get started, like, oh, what? She wants us to talk, but it was great to feel the energy and the connection. So it's wonderful to keep in mind that this is a community. We come together because we all have the same intention and make those small little connections just to say hello and share this goodwill that we have by just saying hello, introducing yourself, each other. This is a path that we don't travel alone. We travel with the support of everyone. If there was just one person in the room and I was talking alone, it would be a very different feel than all of us here together, being together and practicing together. So thank you for that, for all of you being here tonight. So I wanted to share a few reflections tonight on wisdom and acceptance, and just offer some thoughts that I've had over the past few days on the topic, and also later to have perhaps a conversation together. So the idea of this talk really came from an article that my partner forwarded to me from the New York Times. And also for your reading pleasure later, and also for people who are going to be listening to this on the web, the name of it, the article, is The Older and Wiser Hypothesis. And it was published May 6, 2007. So it's not a new one, but I just got it anyway. So this article is about wisdom and about how wisdom is studied, which was new to me. I mean, we practice wisdom. The word wisdom is a word that is bandied about a lot in spiritual traditions, Buddhism included, wise speech, cultivating wisdom, etc., etc., etc. So we're familiar with idea of wisdom. We sort of have an idea as to what it is, but I never thought that actually psychologists study wisdom and try to define what wisdom is. That was new to me. It was eye-opening. And it was interesting to see the similarities that in their definition and what we're cultivating anyway, and we have an intuitive feel for what wisdom is. So basically what they tried to do, let's see, two articles I want to share. The other one is called The Science of Older and Wiser, again, for your future reading. And this was March 12th, 2014, so this one just came out. This is the first one I got forwarded. So there were two articles that I was drawing on. So so basically, in order to come up with a definition of wisdom, what they did was they asked They asked. Let's see. They asked students in law to come up with definition of wisdom, because after some reflection, they thought that wisdom really comes in decision making. In decision making is where wisdom really, really shows up. So by studying, by contemplating, by studying judges and lawyers, especially judges, in wise decision making, which decisions are wise, which decisions are not wise. So based on that, they came up with three dimensions, three key components to what's called to wisdom: cognition, reflection, and compassion, which are very interesting. So the idea of cognition is that there's a lot of information, life information, which is required for thinking about an idea, for thinking about a topic. And that then that ties into reflection, which is let me read this paragraph for you. So according to Dr. Clayton, one must take time to gain insights and perspectives from one's cognitive knowledge to be wise, which is a reflective dimension. And then one can use those insights to understand and help others, which is the compassionate dimension, which again is very familiar to us in what we do. So the reason why I think is actually interesting, there's quite a parallel between studying judges and studying decision making, and also what we cultivate and what we're trying to do in this path is decision making isn't just big decisions, life and death decisions. We make decisions every moment of our lives. You decided to come here tonight. Earlier today, you decided to keep your mouth shut and not say something unwise, or maybe you decided to open your mouth and say something kind. You decided to eat vegetables instead of fried food. We make decisions every moment of our lives. It's so wisdom, in a way, it's not just we make wise or unwise decisions every moment of our lives. So wisdom is not this hoity-toity, this high might idea that's only for judges. It's everyday decisions that we can either make them wisely or unwisely. So based on their study, they came up with 39 questions, a scale of 39 questions that aims at measuring these three dimensions of wisdom. So questions are something that are a problem has little attraction for me if I don't think it has a solution, or I can be comfortable with all kinds of people, or I'm easily irritated by people who argue with me. Of course, people were not told that these things are measuring wisdom. But what is interesting, after actually having done these measurements and after having done the studies, one of the observations is that wise people are able to accept reality as it is with equanimity. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Professor Ardelt said, wise people are able to accept reality as it is with equanimity. Her research shows that when people in nursing homes or with a terminal illness score high on her wisdom scale, they also report a greater sense of well-being. If things are really bad, it's good to be wise, she said. So one other quote I wanted to share with you before talking about an impediment to wisdom is thinking, I can't stand who I am now because I'm not who I used to be, said Isabella Esbrick, a psychotherapist who at 81 still practices part-time out of her home in Sharon, Connecticut. She has aging clients who are upset by a perceived worsening of their looks, their sexual performance, their physical abilities, their memory. For them, as for herself, an acceptance of aging is necessary for growth. But, in quotes, It's not a resigned acceptance. It's an embracing acceptance, she said. So the idea of acceptance and wisdom, I think, are really, really tied together, which is why I wanted to bring those in tonight and talk about them more. And hopefully I've given you a sense of why this became a reflection for me. So with the idea of wisdom, I wanted to share one more thing, actually, and that is, again, from this other article, which is wisdom is really hard to study, says Robert J. Sternberg, a former president. There's a great quote here. Maybe I'll find it later. Here's a good one. So if you think you're wise, you're probably not. Which is so true, because wisdom comes with humility, right? There's this a little out of place. Let's see. Where did that go? No, I can't find this quote. Anyway, okay, I'm going to give that up. I'm going to be wise and give up on that one. There are many, many different parameters, different considerations that come into wisdom. Let's actually do a reflection together. Close your eyes. I invite you to close your eyes. And think about someone whom you think of as wise, or you've thought of as wise in your life. Either growing up when you were a child or now in your life. And think about, what is it about the way they are in the world that you think makes them wise? What do you consider to be wisdom as a lived experience? Is it a quality of the way they are, the way they act? Maybe an instance where you were witness to what they did? So I invite you to open your eyes now. And let's have this part of the program to be a conversation. I have my own reflection, but I want to hear about what came up for you. What is wisdom?
For me, it's a quality of being, and it's recognizable in the person's energy, a certain serenity. And it's interesting, in the Basque tradition, you are not allowed to claim an attribute until somebody else has recognized it in you. So you cannot be wise without it being recognized by others.
Thank you.
I guess in the reflection it was interesting who came to mind, because I think the person is not, I guess, it's a little all over the place, but I guess when I thought deeper about it, why I found them to be wise is like there's an inner knowing and an inner acceptance, like you spoke to acceptance about who they are, and like a real devotion to being with that reality. So like I guess for us, wisdom, I guess when I thought about it, it's like so different. It looks so different within each of us, how that's expressed, because it's an inner, being your inner truth, whatever that means.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? Any other? One more.
So it was interesting. I was trying. I was kind of flipping through people in my head.
This one,
that
one, the other one.
And I settled on my aunt, who struck the moment she came to mind. I thought, of course. And she was somebody who had immense personal strength, and all her energies were always about kindness, mm-hmm. and her strength was always used for kindness, and so I was thinking about what you said about compassion, and it was like that was exactly what it is.
Mm. Thank you.
I was interested in the fact that when the person who came up for me in my mind, the thing most dominant about him seemed to be his easy appreciation for people and events even in his life. He seemed to really take them in and deeply appreciate.
Beautiful. Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you. So I want to share who came up for me. And the reason why this reflection, I think, is important is for us to have a felt sense of having been in contact with someone who has been wise, and also getting in touch with wisdom within ourselves when we have been wise, because it's an aspiration. Wisdom is a paragon that you know, we can't be completely wise all the time, but maybe the Buddha could. But for us lesser mortals, it's an ideal to aspire to. And it's also nice to both recognize it in ourselves now and then, to see, oh, we can make wise decisions. We have made wise decisions. And also see it in others and who are further on the path than we are, so that they can be a model for us. They can be a lived example instead of this idea of wisdom. It's a lived example. This is a person who really appreciates things with ease or has compassion, etc. So the person who came up for me is my mother, and she used to be the matriarch of the family. I was raised in Iran, and large families and extended families are common. So whenever anyone had any problems, any issues, if couples in their marriage had problems, they would come to my mom, and she was the one who gave advice and help. And it's interesting because wisdom doesn't necessarily correlate with education. My mom had a primary education. She was dyslexic. She could never really read or write. But there was just something about the way she was, and as she's aging now, that ease that for example you were talking about, ease and acceptance of all the things that are so difficult physically for her, and I witness loss of control of bodily functions, etc., things like that are so difficult, and she deals with them with so much dignity. They're all okay. It's okay. She doesn't say she hates getting old, or she hates this, she hates that. And to me, that's wisdom, is finding ease in the inevitable, is accepting what is, accepting what you can't do anything about, with ease and with equanimity. So from this other article, I would like to read another paragraph for you. Certain qualities associated with wisdom recur in academic literature, a clear-eyed view of human nature and the human predicament. I especially like this one, a clear-eyed view of human nature and the human predicament. I'd like to talk more about this in a moment. Emotional resiliency and the ability to cope in the face of adversity, an openness to other possibilities. So not being closed-minded, an openness to other possibilities. Forgiveness, humility, and a knack for learning from lifetime experiences. And yet, as psychologists have noted, there is a yin-yang to the idea that makes it difficult to pin down. Wisdom is founded upon knowledge, but part of the physics of wisdom is shaped by uncertainty. Action is important, but so is judicious inaction. Emotion is central to wisdom, yet detachment is essential. So there, as you might have thought about the person who resembles wisdom for you, many of these different aspects might have come for you: humility, forgiveness, emotional resiliency, etc., etc. And I want to especially highlight a clear-eyed view of human nature and human predicament, because as we do this practice here to cultivate wisdom, we often say wisdom arises when you see things as they are. Wisdom arises naturally. You can't will it to arise. So what does it mean to see things as they really are? For me, that goes back to seeing the three characteristics of existence, which are the hallmarks of existence: anicca, impermanence; dukkha, stress, unsatisfactoriness, suffering, however it's translated; and anatta, which is a not-self nature of existence. So with impermanence, for example, anicca, when one sees, not just on a larger scale of how impermanent things are in our lives, how things come and go, but also in a momentary basis of how things arise and pass away every moment. Every moment there is a birth, every moment there is a death, every moment, every breath. The last moment is just gone. It's a new moment. The last moment just died. So that integral, that elemental impermanence, when we see that, we see there's nothing to hold on to. There's really, so that allows one to have a sense of embracing change, embracing that every birth has a death, every youth has an aging, everything changes. And when we see that and accept that, not with resignation, but with an open arms of this is the reality of life, that's when wisdom arises, because we don't try to fight against the inevitable. We don't try to hold on to things that we can't hold on to. We don't wish things were different. It shouldn't be different right now. It should be something else. Instead, opening up to what is, this is the truth of the moment. Whatever the moment is presenting. Similarly, with the second characteristic of existence, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, stress, it's a part of life. It's a part of life. No matter how good we are, no matter what we do, it's a part of life. There will always be things that are difficult in life. There's always stress. There's always illness. There will always be death and aging. So accepting these as integral parts of life, not with a grim, like, oh, life is all suffering, but it's just the way it is. It's... they're ups, they're downs. It's just, this is life. Bad things don't happen because you've been bad. It's just, that's part of life. Change is a part of life. Good things happen, bad things happen. It's the eight worldly winds: praise and blame, joy and sorrow, fame and disrepute, and I'm blanking on two of them. Pleasure and pain. That was pain and sorrow. Pleasure and pain become pain and sorrow. Gain and loss. That's it. That's the one. Thank you. Gain and loss. Yes. So, eight worldly winds, they happen. You know, this talk, I might get blamed for it. I might be praised for it. Who knows? It's just part of life, right? So So seeing life for what it is, it's and accepting it with equanimity is part of wisdom. This is how wisdom naturally arises when we see these truths. And our main tool in this practice, in this tradition, is not just reflection on the truths, but also meditating, but seeing them in moment to moment reality, seeing them in our lives. That's how wisdom arises. And with the third mark of existence, anatta or not self, seeing the lack of control that we have. This is a body. It's part of nature. We are nature. Nature takes its course. No matter how much I will it not to age, not to get sick, it will. It's the uncontrollability. It's a process. This is a process like anything else. So seeing that, wisdom arises from accepting, from not hating the body when it ages, not hating the body when it gets sick. I also really appreciate how they tied in the article the idea of acceptance, and where was it? They had a phrase for it. Not resigned acceptance, but I lost it. Anyway, so I wanted to also spend some time talking about acceptance, because we talk so much in this tradition again about acceptance. Well, what does acceptance mean? And sometimes it can be a scary thing to accept what we don't want to happen. So I invite you to do another reflection with me on acceptance. So close your eyes if you will, please. And for this reflection, choose something that you don't like in yourself. Perhaps it's a habitual pattern of... maybe you call yourself lazy sometimes. Maybe you don't like that you get judgmental. Maybe it's anger. Maybe it's neediness, addictive behavior, whatever it is. Something that you wish was different, that you don't like about yourself. Now sense it, feel into it. When you have it and you've felt into the whatever this is, now ask yourself, what might happen if I accepted this? Whatever it is. What's wrong with accepting this? What bad thing might happen if I accept this? What stops me? What stops you from accepting this? And when you have your reflection, when you have the answer in your own time, open your eyes. So, a show of hands for how many of you it was, it may never stop if I accept it. It might never go away. It might get worse. I won't have control over it. Are you shy? Yeah. It's usually what comes up when we don't want to accept something. But actually, acceptance doesn't mean accepting the whole habitual or whatever it is, doesn't mean accepting that. So what acceptance means, it means accepting how you feel, how your present moment experience with regard to that experience. So it means, for example, if you're angry, anger is like this. This is what it feels like. or if you're feeling needy. Neediness is like this, it's accepting, it's allowing. Allowing is really, is another good word for it. Allowing it to be without wanting it to be any different in that moment, because it's that resistance, is resistance of wanting things to be different, that is like a dam. You know, emotions, feelings are like a river. They come and go. If you put a dam on them, oh, they shouldn't be different. I shouldn't be feeling like this right now. I shouldn't be giving a Dharma talk and feeling really, really tired right now. It shouldn't be happening, right? You dam it. It's like, this should not be happening. Whereas, well, this is the reality of this moment. It is like this. It's like this. It's like this to be tired. It's like this to be angry. It doesn't mean accepting. It doesn't mean validating or approving whatever belief is behind that. It doesn't mean that. So it just means accepting and allowing whatever the truth of the moment is to be what it is without resisting it. It doesn't mean allowing yourself to be lazy or angry or act out of it or anything like that. It just means accept, allowing whatever is to be. Because then that's the step. When you have that stability, when you accept the reality and the truth of the moment, then that becomes a stepping stone for wise action. Because if there is no stepping stone, then one is stuck in that resistance, in that fight, and one doesn't get anywhere. Does that make sense? So being stuck in that resistance, I shouldn't be feeling this way. This shouldn't be happening. One is stuck. But when one accepts, this is what's happening right now. Okay, now what? Then it becomes a point for action. And acceptance is not a resignation, is not a giving up. I want to really, really clarify that. It's not a giving up. It's not a giving in. It's not acquiescence at all by any stretch of imagination. It's just accepting the truth of the moment, finding the stability as a stepping stone to act wisely in response to it. Another thing I want to offer for your reflection in terms of acceptance is that you can't will acceptance. You can't will it. I am going to accept. It's like the same way you can't will yourself to fall in love or will yourself to fall asleep. That never works, does it? Tossing and turning at night. You can will yourself to accept what's difficult. What it takes is an allowing, a softening, a letting go into it. It's the opposite of will. It's the opposite of it's a softening and letting go. So let's see. We have about 7 minutes left. There's more I can say. But also, I think it might be nice to hear from you, reflections you have, thoughts you have. And if not much comes up, I have more to say. So I like. So, what comes up for you when you think of acceptance?
I was at a workshop on dealing with chronic pain, and the gal that was leading it saying, you know, in that situation, the word acceptance is a really tough one, but putting in acknowledge was an easier mind way into it, because you totally are not a doormat if you're acknowledging. It makes it easier to get what she was saying, and I have found that, so using a different word.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
Well, thank
you, Nikki. It turns out that just before you arrived to give this talk, I've been reading this book called Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach. And I actually gave a talk on that yesterday down in Los Gatos.
Great.
So it's still kind of fresh for me. And one of the things that Tara suggests is this practice of saying yes. And I remember some friends of mine have taken this improv class that they offer at Stanford. And one of the things about doing improv is whatever is happening, you say yes. I mean, you know, rather than like, oh, that's stupid, I'm not going to respond to that. It's like you say yes and then go with it, you know, kind of see where it goes from there. And so, you know, this practice of just saying yes to your experience in a wise way, you know, with the appropriate understanding, I think is a real helpful thing, particularly for those of us that have kind of aversive minds that tend to react to the world with no. You know, no, not that. No, this, it's not supposed to be like this.
Right.
You know, so just that, just remembering that one word can be helpful.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Jim. It's and actually, I'm glad you brought Tara Brach up because I wanted to give her credit. Some of the ideas I shared, I learned from her. So I'm really glad you brought her up. And Radical Acceptance is a great book. And also in terms of improv and yes, saying yes and yes and. So I've actually done like a decade of improv I've performed on stage, if you can believe it or not. So that yes and, it's yes and, is the first principle of improv. So you never say no. You always say yes, and you add something to it. So, for example, maybe your improv partner on the stage, you know, says, you know, here's a crystal ball, and you say, yes, great. I've always wanted one. You add to it, right? So it's like taking life forward instead of resisting, like crystal ball. Yeah, I don't want a crystal ball. What are you talking about? Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's a great, yeah. It's life is a great game, right? If you play it, if you have fun with it, and accept whatever life hands you and add to it, it's much more fun. Other reflections, another hand. Actually, hold on a sec.
There's another mic, I think, right behind you.
I have a question for you. I mean, I can see three different circumstances, and I think acceptance would be very different in each one of those.
Yeah.
When is some random event strikes you down?
Yeah.
Rare event. You were struck by lightning or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the second is aging, you know, which is going to bring, you know, suffering of one kind or another, and will happen to all of us. And the third is acceptance of something that's a result of your own character, often problematic character. I think it's hard to see acceptance in those three circumstances as somehow being the same thing. Am I wrong, off?
So, again, coming back to the definition of acceptance, the way we're using it here, I mean, acceptance can be used in so many different ways. It's such a loaded word. So in this way, it's really accepting the present moment emotion, present moment feeling, present moment experience. It's so in that way, it's the same for all of them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to add to that, actually, that it seems like acceptance is best seen as a moment-to-moment experience, because when I make it an ideal, you know, a big surprise, I fall short. And an example is this facial asymmetry that came about because of a tumor that was removed. And I'm very glad of that and glad to be alive, by the way. But if I think of myself, oh, well, I accept it now. It's actually been 37 years. So sometimes I think, well, you should be over it by now, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes when I look in the mirror, I think, oh, this is not the way it should be. that it's not other people. You know, other people have been so kind all these 37 years, you know, that it's my own face in the mirror sometimes that gets me in. And I think it's okay. It's in a way accepting non-acceptance at that moment. It's okay if I have a little reaction here, for
Beautiful.
Heaven's sakes.
Beautiful.
I mean, I'm still working on that one, actually.
Beautiful. I love the way you said that. Acceptance of the non-acceptance. That's it. I mean, you have to start where you start.
Yeah.
I'm accepting that I'm not accepting right now. I'm accepting the resistance, because if you put resistance on top of resistance, but if you accept, okay, I'm resisting it, and it's okay. This is the truth of the moment. This is where I am right now, and that's acceptance. That's self-acceptance. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. One more hand up there.
Thanks. I was thinking about this, and I thought it was interesting. My dad passed away last year of chronic. He had a terminal cancer. And I totally get that it's like the moment-to-moment thing, but then what I'm going to reflect on is that once he accepted his terminalness, I remember him saying, there's nothing else to do but to be kind to each other, or to be kind to others, or to be kind to people now. And I remember that's kind of not the language my dad typically uses. And I was just like, oh my gosh, there's been a transformation of some kind. And at that time, I was not practicing at all. And so as I hear these wise words and map it onto experiences of transformative times, it's really nice to be able to have the, like, to really soak it in this really kind of profound way, like, that I experienced then, but now with, like, the repetition of the reflections and teachings and stuff, it's like, wow, it's really cool.
Thank you. And on that beautiful note, we'll close tonight. So thank you all for your kind attention and input and thoughts and reflections. And may our practice be beneficial for liberation of all beings. Thank you.